On my high school team, we had five guys make the NBA.
We had the county rocking.
It's the mecca of basketball.
There are those who come before us, upon whose shoulders we stand.
It's nothing that you can do to stop a competitive edge.
It's just in the water.
Welcome back to a special quarantine edition.
We got a real special guest.
What's up with you, Brody? With the virtual handshake.
I'm gonna tell y'all something that I never told nobody.
I want all the smoke.
Welcome back to a special quarantine edition of All the Smoke. Jack, what's good, bro?
My brother, how you doing out there, man?
Man, I can't call it. It's ugly out here. Raining, nasty, stuck in the house. What y'all got going on?
Well, Mo, it's sunny out here. We just can't go anywhere. We went yesterday, fed the ducks, and walked. Took a little walk. I might go get some bikes or something, take a ride around the neighborhood. But
yeah, man, you gotta take advantage of that sun.
Best you can get.
That's it. I just need a little bit of fresh air. What's your quarantine hair grade looking like? You looking like
man.
A slave?
Nice like this, I wish.
Eddie K, talk to
young,
him.
Let me see. Eddie K, babe.
Take your hat off real quick. Ooh-wee. Ooh, yo, you look like Dave Chappelle when he played the comedian in Nutty Professor. Yeah. It's time to karate-fy your
karate
ass. My shit's struggling, too. What my shit looking
that's
like? My shit just
that's
be laying down.
Ooh. Oh, my God. I thought you was on Happy Days when you took that thing first off, man.
You see, when it's just slipping,
it bounced right.
Hey, but you see
no,
how quick.
I like that, though. That was kind of clean, man. You got to do the Fonz look sometimes.
Hey, you see how quick that shit be bouncing back to life, though?
Whew. Yeah, you got that. Yeah, you got that
you
bounce,
that
man.
Shit.
That be down Sassoon bounce, in your man. Shit. That's that hue. That's that hue.
That's that hue. Hey, anyway, man, we got a special guest. Someone I've really enjoyed watching playing against. To me, one of the best point guards in the game. Welcome, John Wall.
What's good?
My
what's, good
brother.
What's good?
What's
player?
Up,
bro?
What's up with you, man?
Chilling, man. Bored watching all these NBA games, classics, watching movies, TV shows, shit like that.
How's the family holding up?
They good. You know what I mean? You got a little one in the house, so he like want to get outside every day, ride around his little bike and run around. But other than that, he's just straight chilling.
Talk to me about that, because we got sons that are the same age. I got three of them. You got your first. Talk to me about having a son and how that just changed your life, man.
Just perspective, man. Everything I do now is for him. You know what I mean? Everything I used to do before is for myself and my mom and them. But now everything I do is for him. Like, I don't even hang out no more like that. Might pick one or two days out of every 2 weeks to hang with the guys. But I just had the opportunity to be injured, so I got to watch him grow every day. You know what I mean? Instead of being on the road and traveling. Wish I was playing, but just to watch him grow every day. And now he's 15 months, so he telling me no, he telling me yes, he telling me thank you. He going downstairs to pick up the basketball. So that's all been a great blessing in disguise for me.
No, I know that's amazing, man. Like I said, I got the same. I got a 15-month-old, too. He running the house, so I know you loving that. You also told us before that you got another one on the way, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats, for sure. Bro, appreciate congrats. It. Thank you.
Another little boy?
Yes, sir.
There you go.
So I'm
you gonna be done? Nice. You gonna try to get that girl? You done?
Straight. I ain't tripping. I keep trying.
Smart man.
If I keep trying to shoot for that one, I might be 6'7" in. I ain't trying to build no Brady
yeah,
bunch over
that,
there, man.
Trust me.
Nah.
You don't want to do that. Trust me, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, that's what Jack's on.
Never you on, Jack.
Yeah, don't do. I got seven.
Oh,
five girls, two boys.
Okay, three more. You got a whole two teams. You can play 5-on-5 all day.
I ain't going. I've been operation shut down.
That shit been done.
So us, me and Matt, we in this media space now, and you know when we were playing, the media used to twist our words a lot. Used to make us seem like, you know, we were bad people and never really understood our passion for the game and just never really understood us. And I know you dealing with your own side of that with the media trying to twist it, make it seem like you and Bill don't get along. I've been there. I've got love from both of y'all at the same time. I seen the brotherhood when you brought me out there for the games. I appreciate that again. But talk about that and how the media can try to twist your words and try to make you out to be something you're not.
I think just, you know, I mean, you got two talented young guys, man. Like, one guy that's been there before the other one that's, like, the franchise guy. And another guy that come in that just as talented but just younger. We kind of already meshed, like, we both want to be stars. We both want to take the game-winning shots. We both want to be talked about in the media. We both want to be all this and all that. But at the end of the day, they always say, well, they don't like each other. They downgrading each other. Like, ain't no John Wall without Bradley Beal. Ain't no Bradley Beal without John Wall. Like, we make each other better. Like, we accommodate each other so well on the court that it works easy for us. So, like, when I see the media try to say, oh, they don't like each other. Well, he playing better without him. The team's eating. Everybody moving. The ball's moving. All this. Well, in the day, yeah, you're going to play better when another star player's not out there because you get more shots. Everybody's going to give you the ball more. Like, everything's predicated around you. And we wasn't winning games, so it wasn't good for us. So, like, Brad was like, yeah, I'm getting my numbers. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. But we're not winning games, though. When Brad is out for 4 or 5 games, yeah, John Wall might take 10 more shots or 12 more shots, and his numbers might go from 22 a game to 32 or 34 through that stretch. But am I winning games, or am I getting to the next level opportunity to get a chance to win a championship one day? No. I can never succeed that unless I'm playing with my brother, Mate Bradley Beal. So that didn't really bother me when people were saying that.
I said that's good because, you know, because as players, we know the relationships we have with our brothers. And sometimes that's one reason why we're glad we got this show, because we didn't have that platform when we were playing. You know what I'm saying? When I got into that brawl, everybody talked about me going in the stands and punching that fan, but nobody never rewinded the tape and seen me first get in the stands. I grabbed Ron Artest, and another beer was thrown in his face. So it was only right I would act that way. But now we have the platform to highlight these things, and I'm glad you spoke on that, because us as players, we know y'all relationship tight. We know y'all brothers, and we know y'all want to rock with each other.
Yeah, and that's what I try to tell people anyway, just to look back at, like, y'all era. I love that era, you know what I mean? Because I feel like that's what the league was really about. Like, it wasn't all about getting in the stands and fighting, but you protecting your brother. Somebody doing something to your brother, you're not going to stand there and not help him out. And nowadays, in this new league, you got so many guys that the way they call things, you can't be physical, you can't touch, everything's a flag and foul. Now if somebody say something to your brother, bump your brother, and you try to stand up for him, you might be suspended 3 or 4 games, like, over nothing.
Right.
And you're like, man, dang, if I was going to get spent 3 or 4 games, I might have threw a punch or something.
Man,
so like,
who exactly. The fuck are you telling?
So, like, right. when I tell people all the time, I say, don't get me wrong, these young guys and all these people in this league now is talented, don't get me wrong. But I came in 2010 when you can still get clothesline, get bumped coming across that lane. If you breathe on somebody the wrong way now, you might be suspended. Like, you take away from the physicality of the game, and it makes it so, it's so hard for y'all guys that want to be physical defenders to be able to guard these guys.
Yeah. That you can't do it no more. You can't do it. I mean, it's funny that you kind of caught the end, but we caught even when we came in. Jack, you came in late 90s. I came in early 2000s. It was more physical than that. You know what I mean? They've steadily decreased the physicality of the game. And to me, almost the competitiveness of the game, because you have to walk on eggshells. You have to worry about, damn, if I push someone, am I going to get kicked out the game and jeopardize my team? You know, so it's just a different time now, and I think we kind of have to understand the direction they're going. We talked about this with someone else as another guest, but, you know, now it's all about scoring and all about offense, and it really favors the offensive players. They want to see three-pointers. They want to see dunks. They don't want to see no good defense. They don't want to see no close ball games. They want to see highlights, and I think it's really taken away from the essence of the game.
Yeah, for sure. Like, even when I first got in the playoffs, I think, like, 14, 15 in my first year, and we playing the Bulls first round, and we play Indiana. Like, it was the first team to 80 points won the game.
Now, crazy, right?
Right now, it's like teams got 80 at half. Like, I was in one game. We played Sacramento this year. They had 87 at half. I'm like, yo, this is
that's crazy.
This is, if you got 87, you was about to win the game. You just had to make a couple free throws at the end.
Right.
So, I mean, like you said, you just got to adapt to what the new NBA want and what the world wants.
We want to back up a little bit. You guys played Utah February 28th. And probably a week after that, almost 10 days after that, the league was shut down because of, Rudy Gobert contracting the virus. What was the energy and the vibe like once you guys kind of heard that and realized as a team, hadn't played him that long ago?
Well, when you get that and you start realizing how serious the virus was, you kind of thought, like, oh, man, everybody has to get tested. Like, even me, I wasn't playing. I was on the bench. But, like, you know, I mean, you interact with players, dapping them up throughout the game or saying what up after the game. So you all like, okay, take that focus of where have you been recently? Who have you been around? And me not having a young son, I'm like, well, you definitely have to get tested and make sure you don't have it and make sure you're not passing along, because at the time they were saying if you was elderly, older, or your immune system was up to par, strong enough, or you had a little baby, if they got it, it's very rare they can fight it. So that's all I'm thinking about now in that aspect of making sure my family was straight. And then worry about myself afterwards, because I feel like me as a healthy athlete and young, I can fight it more than what a baby could.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about your work in D.C. in the community. I think it's something that goes unsung, but you really do a lot for that community. You're an advocate for the other teams, the baseball team. You cheer on the WNBA team. You're at the games. But you really give back a lot, and I don't think we hear enough about that. Talk to us a little bit about what you're doing in the community.
I have a place that I adopted called Bright Beginnings. It's like a place for like single moms that like don't have jobs and their kids don't have opportunity to go to school. So we get them somewhere where they can live. Their parents can get the opportunity to go get a job, get some money, put in their pocket, and their kids can go get a degree, like work towards education. So that's big, something I looked at, because I was like, I never had that as a platform growing up, and I see so many homeless people out here. And sometimes these kids never actually been in a situation, but that's just what they're born in, and they can't control it. So why not try to help them? But one thing I always instilled in myself, my mom helped me as a young kid, like if you ever want to be something in life, let people remember you of what kind of person you are, just not as a basketball player. So like a lot of people like have these camps and do these charity events and give back, but they never present. And I'm like, what's the point? Like, let these people feel like you're normal just like them. So I like to be there through. If I got an event for 7 hours, I'm there for 7 hours to interact and show that I'm normal. Like, anybody can throw any money or put their name on any little event or charity event and be like, yeah, I did donate. Well, okay, you donated, but sometimes these kids or these parents might not never get to see an NBA player or a superstar in their city. And that's what I pride myself off of. Like, yeah, the money is cool to get it in, but that's not what I'm doing it for. I'm doing it for to show these people that I'm normal just like them. And if you come from a Section 8 or in a struggle situation, you can make it. You just got to believe in yourself.
I love that, man. That's beautiful. We appreciate that. And like I said, it's always, you know, would the media rather tell that story, or would they rather tell the story that you're beef, or they're making fake beef up about you and your teammates? So that's why, like Jack touched on it earlier, man, we need platforms like this, having social media on our own, to not so much because you don't do it for the recognition, but just to know that we are doing good things out there. And when all, you know, the majority of time the media just wants to point the bad shit out.
Oh, yeah, facts. They definitely gonna pick the bad stuff out of everything. So, like, I always tell my homies, they're like, well, you don't be doing this, you don't do that. I said, I don't do stuff I don't need it for the cameras. Right. Like, a lot of stuff I did in the community, I never did it for the camera. Like, good thing is, like, my team and my team I have around me and my Wizards organization, they, like, wanted to put me out there on that platform and let people see what I'm doing. But for me, I was doing it for years. Backpack giveaway for years and never was really talked about, but it doesn't matter if the cameras show up or not, because these kids getting supplies, they're getting book bags to go to school, and they get to hang out with John Wall for a couple hours, so that was straight for me.
And to touch on where we going next, you remind me kind of the guy that I'm about to ask you about, you know what I'm saying? They twist you, they don't know all the love you get in the neighborhoods and the love you give back to the communities, but AI, you know, you talked about how you looked up to him. You got any AI stories that you can give us?
Man.
With you and him?
Man. My favorite story of all time, like, is when I'm coming out, you feel me? Like, everybody love Jordans, everybody love all this. When you come out and getting shoe deals, the number one pick. So I'm like, all right, Reebok offered me a deal. I'm like, all right, cool, wearing Reeboks is all right. But you know what I mean? It's time in our era with social media and all this. I want to be in Jordans and Nikes.
Yeah.
And then I remember I was in Reebok. I went to take my visit there, like, to talk to him. And AI showed up, came out of nowhere. talked to me for like 2 hours, and he was like, listen here, man, I know what you're going through, I know what you're deciding, because I was the same person in them shoes, coming out of Georgetown, wearing my Jordans, doing all this. But he was like, why not change the culture? Like, why not be yourself and start something in your own way? So once he said that, like, I didn't even have, he didn't even have to walk me upstairs. You can bring the paper down here, I'm signing. Like, my idol just, my idol just came and talked to me and told me a reason why I can go this way and start my own revenue. And they wanted me to, like, you know, Reebok wasn't the same, but they just wanted to start over and see if they can build it back up, which is tough the way their business went. But outside that, AI was the reason why I was like, man, I'm going to sign these papers. Forget what anybody else is talking about.
That's what's
up. So that was like my dopest story for me. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, every time you see AI now, he grabbing your back of your head, love you. You're like, nobody want to be son. So I'm like, come on, AI, you doing too much. Like, I'm grown, man. Like, you don't got to keep grabbing me back of my head.
Hey, he still do that to me. He still do it to me, bro.
But he like,
he still do that to me, dog.
Yeah, so in the day, and I see him do it to everybody. So like, I'm like, you know, you can't, who can you say? Like, you know what I mean? You got older vets than you. He doing this too. But that was just a dope story for me that made me be like, you know what? I got respect from my idol. You know what I mean? And that's all I really cared about at the time being.
That's what's up, man. So you came up in a single parent household. Your mom worked multiple jobs to support you and your siblings, and you went through something that I went through, man, which was the toughest thing I personally ever had to go through. I lost my mom to cancer in 2007. And really, that was when, you know, I would say that's when Jack and I really, we were already teammates. We fucked with each other off the rip, but this dude was here for me every single day, man. Come to my house, check on me, call me, come smoke with me, bring me weed, bring me food. He was just there for me, man. You know what I mean? So obviously condolences and rest in peace to your mom. Talk to us a little bit about that and how that affected you and affected life as a whole, because to me, the pain never goes away. You just learn how to deal with it a little better each day.
Yeah,
talk
for sure.
To us about that.
Well, that was like the toughest for me anyway. You know what I mean? That's my best friend. Like, I always talk to her 3, 4, 7 times a day and all that. So, like, when she was going through that whole process, it was just like, dang, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, hopefully she can beat this because I had lost my dad from cancer when I was 9. So I kind of already knew how that route goes. And then it's like after my 29th birthday, man, and she just started to get real more and more sick, like couldn't move and had to stand still. My mom's one of those moms that, like, you know, get up 5 a.m., 6 a.m., doing everything. Everything's already done for you. Go to school, before she go to work. So when I started seeing it get week and week, I tried to spend as much time as I could with her every day or every time she came in town for chemo or anything like that. Just understanding, like, that it's getting more serious now that she might not make it.
Right.
And I remember she came to my birthday party and we had a blast and all that. And that was like the last time you see my mom smiling and I posted in my pictures. So after that, it started to get tougher and tougher. And I'm like still trying to go through my rehab, but also make sure I spend as much time with my mom because I don't know if this is it or not. And I remember I was like, I'm gonna come down there right after this. We're about to play Charlotte. And it was like, I think a Monday, we was about to play Charlotte. And I was like, yo, you know what? I'm gonna come down, play Charlotte. After the game, I'm gonna stay the night, drive down, go see my mom for like 7, 8 days. We get off the plane, I land, I get to my hotel and I get a call like she had passed early that day but came back to life. Like they pumped her back to life and she's on like a ventilating machine. And I'm like, oh no, this crazy is over. Like I asked one of my homeboys that lived in Charlotte and he drove me straight to Raleigh. It's like a 3-hour drive. I drove straight down. And like just to see my mom on the bed, it was devastating. So I passed out, fainted. And then I'm like, yo, this really might be the last couple of days I get to speak to my mom. So literally every day from that day forward, I never left the hospital, took showers in there, spent the night in there. And it was just tough to see her, but she kept fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. And like this is why I tell you, well, like people say they don't know our relationship between me and Brad because everybody was like, well, y'all don't get along. Y'all don't like, bro, when I got the phone call, the first person that came out of my hotel room to hang out with me was Brad. Like, come to hold me, like, yo, you're my brother. Like, what you going through, I'm going through. And after they played that game against Charlotte, they lost. Brad didn't even get on the team playing. He drove down to be with me in North Carolina for the next 2 or 3 days. You see what I'm saying? So, like, I told the media, y'all think y'all know our situation, but he ain't had to do none of this. He could have just been It could have been a teammate and a brother. And be like, you know what, man? He all right, I'm going to call him. I'm going to leave. Nah, he came to check on me, see my mom, and like that. This basketball stuff can end tomorrow. We never play again. Like, that's going to be somebody I call my brother because he was there in the town when I was there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, that was, like, the most difficult and still is. And, like, one thing that helped me is we got a guy to do chapel for his name, Pastor Battle. And I went to talk to him. My mom was real sick before she passed. And I was like, how do you get through it? Like, how do you get any comfort? He's like, you know, you don't really feel comfort. You're always going to feel that pain. But, like, are you at peace with her leaving? And when he talked to me like that, and I went and talked to my mom one-on-one before she passed and did all that, I knew she fought as much as she could. She was happy, and she was like, I'm at peace. I'm ready to go. That made it more easy for me to accept my mom going, even though you still had those pains and thoughts every day about it.
Man, that's the exact same situation, because my mom was diagnosed November 1st and died November 27th, so within 26 days. So I was in Golden State with Jack and the rest of the squad, and I was back and forth constantly, Sacramento to the Bay. And I remember the last day we were playing the Phoenix Suns, and I had missed practice, and you know she kind of saw I was antsy, but I was still spending time with her, talking to her, and everything. She's like, you know, baby, go play your game. Your team needs you, and then just come back after. So I was like, all right. So man, I drove straight to the game. Like, didn't have shoot around, didn't do whatever. Everyone already knew the deal. Played well. I think we beat Phoenix in either a single overtime or double overtime. Had a really good game. I hit her when I got done, like, hey, mom, she said, you know, you did a good job. You know, get some rest. Come see me in the morning. And she died like 4 a.m. that morning before I got a chance to get back over there and see her. But, you know, to know that You know what I mean? I got to have my nights with her and talk to her, and she was at peace. You know, she said, baby, I'm tired. You know what I mean? She had been fighting. She gave me the advice to, you know, look over my brother, my sister, my dad. She gave me all the game. And then she, you know, I just knew she was in a, she, once she, you know, she can kind of let go, she was going to be in a better place because she was so tired. She was in so much pain, and she just couldn't handle it no more. So it's funny that you said that, because I had to come to peace with her being at peace about it, which is like, damn, like she's at peace with letting go. So I had to be strong and do that. So it's a tough thing to go through, man.
Yeah, that's the crazy, like you don't think like those little talks or that one-on-one mean so much, but for them to be like, yo, I'm tired, I'm at peace. It's like, why would I want her to suffer and keep fighting? You know what I mean? Right. I'm not the one that got to be in that body. So you kind of accept it, but you still like, golly, like my best friend, my mom gone. So for me, like, I had my dad for 9 years of my life, and most of the time he was in jail most of my life, and then I had my mom for 29. So it's like, I know what it feels like not to be on both ends and not have either one. So, like, that's my main goal, is seeing that aspect of how things can be taken away. So that's why I try to cherish as much moments as I can with my son.
Right. No, absolutely. It changes your focus. Then you got a Dear Mama tattoo on your back to honor her, right?
Yeah. I got a Dear Mama tattoo on my back. And then it's crazy because I got like a mama's boy on my chest, like one of my first tattoos I got, because everybody always called me a mom's boy. So then when she was going through the cancer and I'm just seeing her fighting, and I'm like, yo, like I just like, Dear Mom was just so dope to me. And I'm like, my mom will always have my back and always be watching over me. So that's why I put it on the back of my neck.
That's what's
up. That's dope. Hey, 2018, you started pursuing your bachelor's degree. Talk about that. You still taking classes while you quarantining or while you rehabbing?
Yeah, it's crazy. But that was
a promise you made your mom, right? That you was going to go back and get your degree?
Yeah, and that's crazy because, like, before I got on the call with y'all today, I was just talking to my administrator for my school, like, picking my summer classes and my fall classes. So that's just crazy that y'all even bring it up. But, like, I was supposed to do an exam when my mom was going through. She went through and was about to pass. I was like, yo, I can take it like a month off and then finally do my exam. So I finally got through that exam for my last semester and passed that. So now I'm going to get my classes for summer school. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to do that. And, like, my ultimate goal is to even push even further to try to take as many classes more than I can to get it quicker. You know what I mean? Like,
I love that.
When I went into the Hall of Fame, it was dope because my mom was there. And it was, like, one of the last times she was very, like, got to go back to Kentucky and see me. So, like, to know I got put in the Hall of Fame, y'all probably see my speech where I broke down and talked about it. Like,
yeah.
All that was dope to me because she got to witness that. So, like, to see my first son born, to see me go in the Hall of Fame, to see me play 8 to 9 years in the league. Like, and the only thing that really irks me to this day is, you know, you probably feel the same, Matt. It's like, did I do enough? Like, did I make my mom happy? Like, that's the only thing that'd be like, yo, did I have enough fun with my mom? Did I do enough? And I have a dope assistant that always be like, yo, don't ever question yourself or think about that, because just go back and watch the pictures and seeing your mom smile and see that. Like, I got to take my mom.
Yeah, man.
So that kind of clears my mind a little bit. And then, like, I put a picture of me and my mom at the White House Correspondent Dinner. Like, she got to meet Michelle and Barack. So, like, to take my mom to that, that lets me know I did something special.
Hell
so,
yeah.
like, but, yeah, I'm definitely going back to get that degree, though. I'm pushing very hard for that.
I love that. Yeah. I was telling the crew before we got on the air today, I went back and watched Game 6 of the We Believe season when we beat Dallas in the clinching game. And this motherfucking Jack is on fire. And I hit him with one of his, I think I hit him with like an assist that he hit his 6th 3-pointer. Dallas calls a timeout. And somehow the camera, I had never seen the game. I was watching the TNT feed. The camera pinned right to my mom in the crowd. And she was up, jumping around, screaming, hands above her head. And I'm like, that shit gave me instant chills. Like, dog,
facts.
This shit is, what are the chances out of 20,000 people in the arena? Jack was a motherfucker that hit the shot. I didn't even hit the shot. They just happened to pan at my mom and dad and go past them, and I'm like, damn, that shit is crazy. But like you said, she
and
was excited.
I was his Bradley Beal. I was his Bradley Beal.
That was my dog, for real.
You know what I'm saying?
That's when Jack and I became brothers, man. Like, he was there every single day, talking, doing whatever you need, and you need that. That's why, you know, when it happened, I hit you. I hit you like, bro, you know, whatever you need, you want to talk, because I kind of found that, like, you talking about it helped. At first, I was closed off to the world. You know what I mean? Yep. I tried to play a day after. I was closed off, quiet. But then when I started opening up and talking, I really felt like I kind of started to heal a little bit and shared the good memories and the fun times. And that's what Jack was there for, man. We would just chop it up, and it really helped me have a different outlook. Although it still hurt, it just gave me a different perspective on shit.
Yeah, definitely going to always be hurt. But like you said, though, being able to talk about it, have somebody you can talk to, And you can tell, like, kind of bond y'all have, you know what I mean? Even just by this show, but I'm seeing y'all way before this, how y'all bond. Like, you could tell mm-hmm. that bond ain't fake, you know what I mean? And that's one thing, like, we were saying, Jack, when you was fixing your screen, man, it's like, certain things be so fake these days, man. Like, people want to be cool with people yeah. for a certain reason to be talked about, a clout chasing. Like, you could tell when there's genuine love there, and that's when it all matters to me. Yeah. Like, it's cool that's to set it up, keep it moving, but when it's genuine love, you're going to know, man. You're going to know when somebody is really for you.
You're going to know, yeah.
Because we all, everybody in this life, we all normal. We all going to go through tough times, you know what I mean? And tough times don't last as long, man. They make you strong as you're going to be. So, you know what I mean? Like you said, yeah. having some people you can talk to somebody around, it makes it so much better.
That's what's up. Yeah. Let's jump back to college, man, because you had a motherfucking legendary career, legendary teammates, legendary coach. Tell me what that experience was like, because Jack went straight to the league, but I went to UCLA, and it was the best time of my life.
Yeah, my dumb ass. My dumb ass.
Nah, you want a dumb ass. You just got to do it.
But like, nah, Joe, you know, I'm going to keep it real with you. I couldn't pass that damn test, bro. I couldn't
pass that. You ain't telling me nothing. I don't know. I know a lot of people that go overseas for that. They ain't tripping.
Right.
But like, one thing I would say, though, Jack, if you ever had the opportunity, bro, that would have been your best time ever, man.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
like for me, I knew I was going for 8 months, you know what I mean? But like, I'm like, yo, I'm here to win a championship. I don't win it, cool, but I'm going to have this most fun ever. And to being able to go to class or get up and grind every day, man, like we had, bro, when I tell you Coach Kyle's one of the crazy coaches, after like 2 weeks, I said, yo, I think I picked the wrong school. I want to transfer. I called my mom. She was like, boy, you staying. Like, listen, every morning we had to be on the suicide line. We had 20 suicides in 20 minutes at 6 a.m. every day for summer school. So, like, our first 10 suicides was, like, the basic one, free throw line, bang, bang, bang. Then the last 10 was baseline, other free throw line. Like, and I'm like, yo, did I pick the right school? Like, this is not basketball.
That's
and
crazy.
Then, Pat Riley. Type thing. So, I tell you one of the funniest stories is we run a suicide. We got, like, 4 left. And, like, the guards had to finish, like, 28 bigs, had to finish, like, 35. DeMarcus' feet caught on fire. Like, so he stopped running, like... He missed suicide. He run to the sideline. I quit. Like, my feet burn. I ain't doing it no more. Coach Kyle, he would want to be all Billy. So he was like, you know what? If he would have finished the suicide, I'm going to give y'all tomorrow off. No, he wasn't going to give us tomorrow off. Just trying to use it. So we got suicides the next morning, man. DeMarcus sitting at half court. He ain't got to run. He the reason why we got to run today. He's sitting at half court, no running. We all looking at him like, yo, we got to jump him after this because, like, there's no way we got to run suicide. And he ain't got to run. But we know nobody beating DeMarcus up back then.
No way.
But, yeah, like, Jack, that school, man, it was the most fun ever, man, just being able to prepare every week, having maybe 2 or 3 games. And the most fun with me was going on the road. Like,
you don't get that
atmosphere and that culture they brought with talking trash, and it's just you and your 14 guys. And you going out there to go to battle and go to war, and it's like, you got to win or survive out here. Ain't nobody on your side. You know, Kentucky fans travel, but it feel like...
Hell yeah.
It still didn't feel like a home game because of the way they was treating it, but it was dope, man. You couldn't ask for nothing better. And, like, everyone for me being number one pick, I wanted to go back to school just to win a national championship, just to get that atmosphere and that, like, fun and how exciting that was.
That's what's up. Tell me about what that team was like, because you played with a lot of NBA players in college. Your team was rock star status. You know what I mean? Man. That's when social media just started hitting. Like, y'all was the shit. You, Bled, Boogie. Man, like, what was that like?
It was so, man, like, we stayed in a Wildcat Lodge, and, like, we walked, like, outside our building where we stayed in the practice.
What's
court,
Wildcat like, Live?
It's, like, where the players stay, but we got to let, like, 10 regular students stay so they don't, like, you get extra benefits. It's like where we stay, like half an apartment. So we had like a game room and all that in there. But like from here to like 10 steps is like where we practice at. But it would be like 60, 70 cars of people waiting for autographs every day. And we couldn't get away from them. So it was like, yo, we can't even walk to class without. So like we started like using a golf cart to go to class. Football team got mad. They told us we couldn't use it no more. So we had to walk. It's like.
Haters.
So cold. We walking backwards to class. But what was so fun about that year was, you know, nobody, like, the returning players that came, like Patrick Patterson and Ramon Harris and Darius Miller, none of these guys never played for Cal. So, like, the freshmen in the upperclassmen, it's all something new for all of us. So, like, they didn't know what Coach Cal was looking for. We didn't know what Coach Cal was looking for. So we all had to bond and come together. But we did everything together, bro. We went bowling together, out to eat together. Like, we treated it like you do as a league team That's great camaraderie and one of those good teams because they hang out together
nigga,
so much.
Nigga, that was a league team.
For sure. Yeah, so that's what I was just about to say. Nigga, y'all had 18 pros on your team.
But, you know, like, we had all the other guys that kind of like, you know, like, if you got, like, me, Pat, DeMarcus, E. Bled, like, we know we about to go. But all the other guys, like, man, they ain't going to hang with us. They don't really rock with us. But we like, nah, bro, we all a brother. We all a family. Right. Like, we going to war to fight every night. If fuck one guy get us. Hurt, the 15 guy going to hang with us. So to have, like, the guys that didn't think they was a part of our crew all to get together, that's why our team was so fun and having so much. Man, we was just doing whatever, man. Like, we could nothing was wrong for us to do in college at the time. And we walked to the corner store, it's like, oh, man, there go them guys again. We're like, well, we here.
That's us. No, so it was dope. College was the, outside of having children and being blessed to play in the league, like, college was the funnest time of my life, man. That's
and
just
you
like
in,
your
and,
last.
And you in L.A. You at UCLA, so I know you was having a blast.
Yeah, but see, I think different because L.A. is L.A. and it's so big and there's so much other shit to do. You know what I mean? So it's not you went to where motherfucking Kentucky basketball is
basketball
religion.
And horses. Basketball
right.
and horses. That's
basketball
all you got.
Is religion. I remember the best part, going there was dope, but my freshman year in 98 was the NBA lockout. So we had everybody at our game. So I'm tripping coming from, like, Sacramento. Like, motherfucker, we got Shaq and Kobe at our game. We got movie stars at our game. We got Snoop coming to our game. And I'm like, damn, this is what UCLA is about. Like, this shit was a trip, but it was because it was the NBA lockout. So we had hella NBA players at our game, front and center. And I'm just like, yo, this shit can't be real. Like, it was just like that real La La Land type shit. And that's when I just fell in love with this shit, bro. That shit was a blast.
That was my plan, to go to college for 8 months. We had the number one recruiting class that year at Arizona. Me, Mike Bibby, and Eugene Eckerson. We had the number one recruiting class
that
year.
Okay, yeah. I was loaded. Yeah, I remember that class.
Yeah.
And we already had Michael Dickerson, Miles Simon. We had all them guys already. So we was going, and they ended up winning the national championship. So it worked out how it was supposed to work out. My ass just wouldn't stay. I couldn't stay out the club. Test was at 8. I'm leaving the club at 5:30. That wasn't going to work.
I ain't going to lie, man. First time I took that test, man, I fell asleep. I was like, man, I don't need this to pass. They come back and say, all right, I'm going to tell you one thing. You're going to be figuring something else out. I said, all right, now I got to lock in. I brought me a snack this second time. First time, I ain't bring no snack, no calculator. I'm like, I got this. You know what I mean? Spelling names wrong, doing all that. You better get this right or you're going to be hurting.
Exactly.
Talk to us about, so you know, Kentucky, you're projected the number one pick. You end up being the number one pick to the Washington Wizards in 2010. Tell me what you remember most about that situation.
Like going into the draft or like just after I declared?
Just the process of like, I got a chance to be the number one pick in the NBA draft.
Oh, it was crazy because like, it's so crazy because my senior year, they're like, well, you're going to be a number one pick. But I'm like, yeah, y'all, whatever. Y'all just talking. And then, you know, like, you got a lot of guys from back home like, well, he going to be in school 3-4 years. He ain't going to do what he's supposed to do, whatever. So for me to go there, like, my first couple games, like, my first game winner. I mean, cause I had to miss 2 games, game winner. Then we get to play Carolina at Kentucky. You know, I'm excited for that game because, you know what I mean, being from North Carolina, like, it's my dream school. Not getting a scholarship offer because I didn't want to commit on the spot. So I'm like, yo, we get to play Carolina, Roy Williams. They had Dexter Strickland and Larry Drew, the guys they had picked over me to go there.
Ooh.
So I felt an even certain way to play even more higher.
Hold on, one sec. Talk to us about that Carolina situation. That's crazy. So you wanted to go to North Carolina, and they wanted you to commit on the spot, and you couldn't do it?
So Carolina's my dream school. Like, you know what I mean? Either go Carolina, Duke, NC State, really your main schools, you be home. And I always loved Carolina. And, you know, Ty Lawson was there at the time. And I'm like, yo, Ty Lawson killing. I love watching him play. But then I also got to see Derrick Rose play at Memphis. And I'm like, yo, I got to play for Coach Cal. But I'm like, yo, I got to stay home at the time being. And then I went on a visit. And Tyler Hansbury, they went to a football game. And they was like, well, we'll give you an offer if you commit on the spot. I'm like, I'm not committing on the spot. I still want to go watch. I mean, I'm from where I'm from. I want to see all these other schools and get to see these other states, take visits. So I'm like, I'm not committing on the spot. They're like, well, we're not going to offer you. So I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to Carolina. I'm never going to Carolina now. Then I got to play Larry Drew. Not to backtrack, but I got to play Larry Drew after he committed to Carolina at the GlaxoSmith tournament, which is owned by me now, my John Wall tournament. So I got to play him in front of Roy and all them. We won that game. So we get to play them in college. I'm like, yo, we got to kill them. I'm telling my team, like, we got to kill them. Like, it's a big game for me. And we beat Carolina. Then I get to play UConn with Kemba and Jerome Dyson and Stanley Robinson in the Garden. And I think that was my solidified party of being number one pick because I had like 15 of our last 17 in the last 5 minutes in the game winner. So now my whole aspect is like, to my whole aspect now, like, I'm on the Great Wall of Sports Illustrated. So I'm like, yeah, I'm about to go to the league. But, like, I'm trying to tell everybody, like, just let me focus on this college moment, because I know it can go by like this if you lose early in the NCAA tournament. So I told all my team, like, Coach Cal always get, like, his top point guard, top pick. You ever know they got a slam cover with all of them up there? Like, they had Coach Cal and Derek and Coach Cal and Tyreek, and it was supposed to be me and Coach Cal. And I'm like, yo, nah, if you're going to put me on the cover again, I'm tired of being on cover by myself. Put DeMarcus, E. Bled, and Patrick Patterson on this cover with me. So if you ever seen the Slam magazine before the tournament, they got all four of us up there with Coach Cal. And, like, my teammates couldn't believe that I put him on there with me. I'm like, that's the type of bond we have. Like, this is a camaraderie and love I got for y'all as my brothers. So a lot of people don't even know that story. So in the article, it's like the cover, the bold letters, me in yellow. But I say, yeah, my letter's bold, but you see my other three brothers up here with me.
Yes, sir.
And when I first got, and not the backtrack, when I first got to school, though, Coach Kyle was like, yo, I know you're going to leave. We all know you're going to leave. But take four or five guys with you. And I'm like, Coach Kyle, I can't do that. Like, I can't. I don't know if these guys got that dog or going to want to go to the league after 1 year. And we end up having five guys in the first round that's never been done before.
That's crazy. Insane.
So talk to us. You, a heel injury that ended, that you needed to have surgery and ended your season. You're rehabbing that. And then at the house, you slip, fall, tear your Achilles.
Yeah.
Like, that's back-to-back. Crazy, similar to crazy luck that DeMarcus had. Talk to us what your mind state was like after that.
It was so crazy, was because when I tell you about before that, I had a bone spur in my knee. Like, so I'm gonna tell a story about all this, like, when all this over. But I had a bone spur in my knee, like this long, like a tooth, like 2-3 inches in my knee, so I couldn't bend my knee. So when I was walking around, the doctor's like, yo, you should have been broke your kneecap. You should never been an all-star. All this, I'm like, well, I guess I got a high pain tolerance. So I played through that. I got that fixed. That's when I had my best year, 16-17. We go to game 7 against Boston. Then I come back, like, the next 2 years, like, certain games, my heel would hurt. Like, I'm talking about walking on my tippy toes where I couldn't even go to the bathroom at night. It's like somebody would just stab me with a knife in the back of my heel and just keep twisting it. And you know me, like, I feel like I have that mindset. If it ain't broke, you can play. But at the same time, like, I'm really giving my all when I shouldn't be right now, because I can mess my career up. So going into, like, 18-19, I'm playing, and I was like, I having games where, like, I'm talking about Jack and Matt. Like, well, I couldn't even, like, run down the court. Like, anybody could have got by me. And we playing Cleveland. I had the worst game of my life, 1 point. And I should have subbed myself out at the beginning, but I'm like, yo, I can get through this. I can fight. It's going to warm up. It never warmed up. And, man, after that, I was like, yo, I got to shut it down. Like, I got to have surgery to get this out of there. And they was like, well, you might not come the same. But people don't really know. With me slipping, that really ain't even the reason why I tore my Achilles, because I had a bone spur underneath my heel. So I had to lift my Achilles up already to take the bone spur out. So when I did that, you know, I made my Achilles real weak, and I was in a walking boot and stuff. So it just finally gave. But now when they put my Achilles back down, my bone spur is out, but I'm like walking like this. So like it finally just gave. But the doctor's like, it's best you did it like that, because if you would have came back and rehab and worked out, it would have just tore complete. Like KD and then like fully ruptured. So mine ain't fully ruptured. I have like a partial tear in mine. So I was rather better off doing that. So, you know what I mean? So let me tell y'all a story about it. So then I get through that. Bro, I've been through 4 or 5 surgeries with that because I kept getting infections. Like now I'm thinking like, man, y'all might have to cut my whole leg off. Y'all can't clear the infection out of there because it's deep down in my foot. So now my mindset is, man, forget the Achilles of getting that fixed right now. Just please clear this infection so I can be healthy, like be able to walk and have my foot still.
Right. Perspective.
That's all I was really worried about. So people didn't even know that side of the story. So I'm like, yo, just please get the infection out. And I kept tired of getting, like, opening it up, cutting and closing it, opening and closing it. So I was like, man, forget even playing basketball. Just let me have my legs so I can walk and be normal and play with my kid one day or whatever. And then I finally got past that stage where now I'm like, I can't wait to prove everybody and show everybody what I got, because everybody think I'm done.
That's tough. Now, you were on assignment with the G League, and I heard you was getting back to your shit. How are you feeling during that, and where do you feel like you're at right now?
I say you took somebody's face off at practice or something.
I send y'all some private videos, but when I tell you, like, when I tell you, I'm like, you know, like you playing. So let me tell you, I know my mindset. So when I'm playing, I'm not playing, I'm watching these guys play, you know, like the young guys, and they all like they killing our team and they looking at our bench and stuff. Just know I got those right down in my notes for when I come back when they start next season, because I'm like, I can't wait to show them what I got, what I'm about. But I'm gonna be better than what I was before, and that's the scary part about it, because damn near my whole year, damn near the whole like my 5 years I was an all-star, bro. I played with two bone spurs in my knee and my heel, and people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So y'all like
speaking of guard.
They ain't even getting the best of John Wall yet. So like they just got a clip of him.
That's scary. I already know you got a lot left for the tank, and from all this time you missed, I know you're gonna come back and kill.
Yeah.
But speaking of guards, you talking about the guards you got. Who's your top five PGs of all time?
Woo! All time, man. Magic up there for sure. It's just Steph up there for sure. I know people be like, that's too early, but Steph definitely up there. See, people like downgrade CP and don't like CP because of the way he do
stuff.
Shit.
He's a motherfucker.
I'm not saying y'all, but like, see, y'all played against him. Like, people might not like CP, but what he brings to the game, like, as a leader, as an IQ guy, and a dog, and don't back down for nobody, I could put him in my top five because of that, because he don't give damn who it is. He trying to rip your head off.
And
that's what I love. That's what I love about CP, man, because, like, I played him in, you know, Seth Cassell's. I coached for a little bit, then he went and coached the Clippers. So I'm like, Sam, I'm about to bust CP ass. I don't get damn what you say. He like, well, CP gonna bust your ass. I'm like, well, we just gonna have to go in it because you coached both of us. And that's what I love, because CP don't give a damn who you is. Yeah. And that's the mindset you gotta have, man.
So, you gotta have that.
I got him, I got CP, I got Magic. I gotta put John Stockton because he all-time assist leader, you know what I mean? Just not even that. And then I go Isaiah Thomas. I love Isaiah Thomas.
Zeke.
Yeah, Zeke. How can you not love Zeke, man?
Speaking of CP, you have a signature motherfucking move that you caught me with, and it's still getting shown a lot more lately because there ain't no motherfucking basketball. When you did that motherfucking 360 spin layup, and I seen your eyes getting big, and I know you wasn't crazy enough to try to dunk on me because you know I fouled the shit out of you, but you was up like, when you approached me, I'm like, yo, this motherfucker's eyes are getting real big. He about to pull some shit, and next thing I know, this motherfucker jumps, spins around, and makes me, I just saw it kind of coming. I just turned the opposite way and looked, and like, this motherfucker did the smoothest 360 layup on me ever.
I'm going to be realistic, man. I was about to dunk it, but when you started to spin, like, when you move to the right, where like when I lean in with my left, so I'm like, I can't do this, I'm gonna fall. And I know he ain't grabbing me. He throwing me straight to the ground. I ain't no dunking on that. So in my mindset, I'm like, yo, I gotta spin. You know, that's my go-to. Like, I just all play off instinct. So once I see you lean, I'm like, I'm gonna spin. Yeah.
I did not know that was on Matt.
Yeah, and the reason why I was in that mindset was, Matt, you probably don't remember, me and CP was already going at it, like arguing the whole game.
It was a battle. Y'all was going at it.
And then, like, CP's on the bench, and he had said something a couple of plays before that. And you got to think, we were down like 18. So I'm like, man, fuck that. I got to start putting on a show. And the night before, I had just killed the Lakers, so I started putting on a show, and we come back and make it a game. Then CP come back in and win it for him. But, like, that stretch was like, we went on like a 12-0 run, and that's when Doc brought the Wolves back in.
No, that shit was tough. I remember because I thought for a second you're going to jump. So I start coming towards you, kind of clearing the way. Like, I'm going to try to get you before you even take off. And then next thing I know, that boy just.
Yeah, I remember that play. That shit was cold.
That shit was dope. So obviously the goal in Washington has been to win a championship. You and Bill being two of the best guards in the league. What do you think, free agency, draft, how do you feel like you guys, and this is no knock on the current team, you know what I mean? This is just real talk, and your goal obviously is to get to the playoffs and win a championship. What do you kind of feel like you guys need to have happen for that to happen?
Well, for one, like you said, though, you started right there. I feel like for a couple years in the past, we just kept trying to rebuild through the draft like you do in a lot of other sports, but in the league, your window's kind of short. You don't have time for that, you know what I mean? And I feel like me and Brad is a great cornerstone. We have Rui, he's a rookie that's in there. But I feel like we definitely gonna need us a three that's a dog, you know what I mean? That can knock down shots and compete and create for us. And then we also gotta build a bench, you know what I mean? Just being realistic. Like, I love the team we have now. We have some great pieces and a lot of young guys that just getting the opportunity to play where they probably would have never gotten on other teams.
Right.
But like, I feel like if you wanna be one of those teams, you gotta have veteran guys around that's willing to understand their role. And that's kind of what we dealt with in the years past with our teams is nobody really understood their role. And trying to get guys to understand their role, we never accepted it. And you know how hard that is, Jack and Matt, when you got 7 to 8 guys on 1-year deals every year. Like, everybody's trying to fight for their next contract. So their mindset ain't like thinking about, well, we're going to be here for a while. We can build this future to get to what we want to. They like, nah, I'm not with it. I'm trying to get paid right now.
Right.
And I feel like if we add some pieces where guys going to buy into what's going on, then we'll be fine. But if guys ain't willing to buy into that, then we can't bring those guys a part of our team, because we know me and Brad is the main piece of the team that just find all these pieces that fit us. And you never know what the future could hold.
It's two things. We're heading down the home stretch. Who's your favorite guy to battle when you're like, okay, shit, we're playing so-and-so tonight. Like, this is when I'm going to be on my shit.
My guy's Kyrie, man. For some reason, like, when me and Kyrie, like, what makes me so frustrated is we felt like those 2 years we supposed to have been in the East Conference Finals. That 1 year we lost to Boston. And the year I broke my hand against Atlanta. And Jack, remember that series. So yes. I was upset about that. So I feel like that's the matchup everybody want to see, me and Kyrie, to go at it for 7 games or 4 games, however long. And I never got the opportunity. So every time we played them, it felt like, even in the regular season, it felt like we was in playoff mode. Like, even when Brian hit that crazy
fadeaway. Y'all was trying to simulate that,
When Brian hit that crazy fadeaway out the glass, like, I felt like every time we played them, it's like, me and Kyrie just know this is what it is. Like, it's a battle. And at the time, it was like, who's the best point guard in the East between us? Or who's even the second best player in the East behind LeBron? And that's what my mindset was, and it's always been like that with him.
That was a full-court pass to Bron, caught it in the corner, turned and shot it off the glass,
bro. He caught the joint in his slot in front of the three-point line, and once he caught it, we're supposed to foul him. We let him take a dribble back behind the three-point line, fades. So he running past me after he make it. I'm like, yo, you know that was luck. He said, nah, young fella, I do this all the time. And I'm just like, goddamn, he always making shots like this. So, like, I ain't got shit I can say. He got championships, so what more can I say to Bron?
But that was the same game where he got away with a travel, right?
He missed the layup. So bad, bro. He traveled so bad. I knew what move he was doing. I know what Bron wasn't doing transitions. We all know what people want to do. You can't stop him. He traveled so bad, and he messed his timing up and missed it. He was like, I really blew the game. Like, yeah. And it's crazy because I'm like, yo, Kevin Love outlets this pass so perfectly. Like, you couldn't have nobody else better to throw that pass than Kevin Love.
Right.
What's a former player you wish you could got a chance to go to battle against?
Well, I ain't even going to say go to battle. Well, you know one player I wish that I could still battle with, and I wish he never had those injuries? Because he was the toughest player I ever played in my life, was Derrick Rose, boy.
Ooh-wee.
Because coming in my rookie year was the year he won MVP. Man, when I tell you, it was nothing you could do. Like, I don't care.
He was a problem.
How fast you was, how quick you was. Because he one of those guys that we never seen a guy that be that fast and that athletic, but had one of the best floaters we ever seen. Like, his floater was impeccable, bro. He never missed it off 2 feet going right. So it's like, which way I'm going to force him, left, where he's going to dunk on my center? And going right, it wasn't like he got to the rim all the time. He had lays, but he had a tough floater that was tough to guard. So he would be that guy, but the guy I said I wish I would have played with AI, that would be my guy.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That would have been ugly, because you're bigger, just as fast. That's scary. You got any Kobe stories? Any memorable Kobe stories?
Yes, man. My favorite Kobe story was my rookie year. We going to play them in L.A., you know what I mean? You know how you still like, no, I can't believe I'm about to play the Bean. Like, there's no way I'm about to play Kobe. And I got Gil on my team. Gil come out there wearing Dolce & Gabbana, no shoestring straps.
Yeah.
I'm like, so I'm going to play Kobe with a guy like Gil that don't care about nothing. Like, so I get Kobe in the post. He guarding me. I'm guarding him in the post. He spins. I block his shot to half court. You know, I chase after it. Think I'm about to get the loose ball, and they kick it to him, and I run back over. They shoot a three. And he was like, that was a good block, young fella, but the play continues. I should have never said nothing because he ended up, like, scoring, like, 20 straight on us. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to mind my business and not say nothing no more.
Don't wake him up. Sometimes you can't wake him up. You got to let him chill.
Yeah. And then my last moment I had with Kobe was one of the best ever. Like, we battling, me and Kobe. Like, I'm really going at it. Like, Kobe's scoring, I'm scoring. It's fourth quarter. It's, like, it's the last 7 minutes of the game. We're going back and forth. I'm guarding him, he guarding me. They ended up winning, but it was like the Kobe, like, last stretch before, like, he tore the Achilles and stuff. And that was dope for me to be like, I could tell my son and show my son that highlight on YouTube of going to a battle and war with Kobe to win a clutch game.
Yeah, that's deep.
That's dope.
You touched on it real quick before we got a couple more questions, but what was it like to have Gilbert Arenas as a teammate?
Hibachi. Well,
it was wild for me because, like, he was teaching me the ropes. Like, he wasn't trying to put me under the wraps or anything. But just to see him, bro, like, he always goofing around, having fun. But, like, he still had that work ethic, even though he know he wasn't healthy. Like, I would go in there some nights to get shots. He'd be already in there shooting one-hand threes from half court. I'm like, what the hell? Like, I can see why you used to hit these game winners from back in the day and turn around. But, like, Gil was still, like, a guy that loved the game, but he was funny as hell, man. Yeah. He was one of the coolest guys to be around. And he was loyal. Like, I remember my first time, like, my second, third time walking in the locker room, and we wore the same size. And, like, you know, they had those Yeezys that Louis Vuitton had made with the red ones and the gray ones and the cream ones. And, like, he just dropped the whole box of shoes off in a shoe bag, like, 70 pairs of shoes. Like, yo, this for you, young fella. And this when I was with Reeboks. You know, I was wearing designer sneakers at Reeboks. There wasn't too much I could wear. I was like, man, this is the coolest vet ever, man. I ain't got to go buy no Louis, no nothing. I got everything I need. So he was always dope to me, and me and him still kicking. And then, like, if I need basketball advice, I call him and ask him, and we just chop it up.
That's what a lot of people don't understand is his basketball mind and how hard he works.
Oh,
he's a psycho when it comes to work ethic. And it was funny because I talked to heard him telling a story about Kobe had a conversation with Gil about he needs to start giving back to the game more and take stuff more serious because he's got such an amazing basketball mind. Yeah. And obviously, you got a chance to touch on that.
Yeah, and he's starting to do that now. He talked about it once Kobe passed. He's like, yeah, Kobe, you wanted me to do it, so I'm going to start doing it. But like you said, like Jack, both of y'all said before the show started is, I wish y'all had this platform back then because people portrayed y'all who y'all are because of y'all image and y'all mindset and the dog and hunger y'all have for the love of the game that people portray you in a different way. And now, like, people look at Gil and be like, nah, Gil ain't like that. Or hear Kobe talk about Gil in that way. People wouldn't expect it. They think Gil is, oh, he's always goofing, always not taking the game serious. But he puts that work in. But any day, like I try to tell people is, at any day, everybody got 24 hours out of day. We're not going to be in the gym for 24 hours, so we still going to live our regular lives and do other things. But you can never knock nobody's work ethic. You don't know when they putting that work in. Because everybody not going to record and film everything. Like, everything's not supposed to be filmed. My work is my work underground.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got these quarantine quick hitters. Last couple questions before we get you out of here. Jack, go ahead and start him off.
Who you think should be a guest on All the Smoke? Who you think should be our next guest?
I feel like the next guest on All Smoke should be Bradley Beal, my teammate for sure.
There you go. And you're going to make that
happen.
We're
going to make it happen
now. Appreciate
you. Yeah, you know, 9 out of 10 times when you say something, you know, word is born.
Appreciate that. What are you currently binge watching?
Like watching on TV?
Yeah. You watching anything on TV? Any shows, anything?
Yeah, I'm watching. I'll be watching Chicago PD, Jack Ryan, and then I'm on Ozark. I just started Ozark.
Okay. So you're in season one of Ozark?
Yeah, that joint crazy.
That shit, it started a little slow, but trust me, when it gets going, bro, that shit get going.
Yeah, my assistant put me on that one, but yeah, I heard that joint get going, so I'm going to finish that up.
That's dope. What's your quarantine snack? Goldfish. You and your son fight over those, huh?
Goldfish.
Oh, man, I had to bomb the ones with... I had to buy the goldfish that got, like, they shaped like Mickey Mouse. So, like, because he like Mickey Mouse. So, he be thinking them joints is real. So, he don't touch mine when I give him the Mickey Mouse ones. I figured it out.
I love
it. Hey, they got the tropical color. They got the tropical color Fruity Box. The fish, they got the tropical colors.
Oh, yeah,
you ain't had them yet?
Them. I ain't been in those stores. So I've been trying to lay low. But you put me on the song.
Yeah, that tropical boy. Hey, so tell me this. What's your favorite retro jersey?
Favorite retro jersey, man, I ain't gonna lie, man. That Memphis Grizzly one, the Shreve Abdul-Rahim, like the light
one. Oh, the early one with the grizzly on it? Yeah.
Yeah, man, like, I be wearing that joint every summer. Like, I wear at least once a month every summer. Like, I might go outside. I just love the way that color hit.
You the second person to say that?
That color is crazy.
That's what's up. Artist or song that's on repeat right now? Who you fucking with?
Right now, I'm on NBA YoungBoy right now. Slime Mentality.
Yes, sir.
NBA
YoungBoy.
I'm on NBA YoungBoy right now.
My favorite song by him is Lonely Child.
Yeah, I love that Lonely Child. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, but you know Lonely another Child, one that you don't take off repeat is Roddy Ricch, War Baby. I don't take that off repeat neither.
Yeah.
Jack.
Yes, sir.
We come down to the begging segment brought to you by
Bing Bang Bing.
Steven Jackson. What do you want to bang John for?
Doing the drums, please. Bang. I can't beg him for nothing. The last couple years when he had playoff games, he flew me down, gave me floor seats, he took care of his bro.
More than five times. I have nothing to ask from my little bro. He always been a great little bro to me. So I just want to give him his props and say thank you for always holding me down when I call, little bro. You know I'm a call away when you need me. It's nothing I can ask you for because you always been trill with me, dog.
For sure. All love, big bro.
Killer, killer.
Yes, sir.
Well, hey, man, that's a wrap. We want to thank our special guest, John Wall. Continue blessings to you and your family and your journey back to the court. We can't wait to see what you say is the best John Wall yet. So we're excited about that.
For sure. Appreciate y'all for having me, man. Love and blessings back to y'all family also.
Yes, sir, my boy.
That's a wrap. You can find this on Showtime Basketball YouTube or all platform streaming podcasts.
All of them. Good job, my boy.
There's something about how this place forms a different kind of person.
On my high school team, we had five guys make the NBA.
We had the county rocking.
You mentioned Prince George's County. People know what it's about. It's the Mecca of basketball.
There are those who come before us, upon whose shoulders we stand.
Being from this area, you have to have tough skin.
The gym became his sanctuary.
PG County guy. Provide buckets for America. You take your
language too serious. Prince George packs a lot of power, a lot of character.
It's nothing that you can do to stop that competitive edge.
We're pushing the community and the culture forward.
It's just in the water.
This life was all I ever wanted.
I'm not leaving. Not yet.
I was hoping you'd say that.
We gotta hit the streets, make some money.
People like us must destroy people like him. Buckle up.
Get Showtime free at Showtime.com.